High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel alright.
Welcome, Vampire Kings, Watchers, Hunky Boyfriends, oh, and an extra special shout out to you Vampire Slayers out there. Slay like you've never slayed before. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez. And the party's at my place this evening. But first, school is still in session. And if you can tell by my voice, I should have called in the substitute teacher. As you can tell, I'm feeling a bit under the weather, so I do apologize for my voice. And there's good news and bad news with that. The bad news, well, it sucks to be sick. And frankly, like I said, I should have called in the substitute, but there wasn't enough time because, you know, the episode was due. However, the good news with that is that I was able to record the episode before I got sick. Not that I knew or anything, but you know how it is. It really sucks being sick. Anyway, whatever, we're going to power through. We got some homework to talk about.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
This is going to be a fun one, guys. This is going to be one you're going to enjoy. We're talking about a really fun movie here. We are still in our Women in Horror series. And is this a horror film? Technically, yes. But this is definitely one of those light horror films that won't scare you people who are afraid of gore or general spooks away. I think you'll enjoy it. The film is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And to be clear, it's not the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's the film that predated it. Same writer, Joss Whedon. Yes, the man who brought you Avengers and all those fun things. It's, you know, not his film because he wrote it, but we'll get into it. It's from his universe, if you will. And we're going to get into it with one of my favorite guests of all time. I love when she's here at the Slumber Party, Cara Gayle O'Regan. And I can't wait till you guys hear the wonderful interview we had. But first, your other homework, of course. And I'm going to give you that pass. I'm still giving you that pass for... you know, continuing to, I don't know, be an accomplice to John Cusack blocking High School Slumber Party on Twitter. My throat hurts, my voice hurts, my whole body hurts, so I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'm going to try to limit the talking. What I am going to talk about, though, is the great job you all have been doing on social media. Class participation is super important, and remember that you can follow us and participate on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, High School Slumber Party, in all those places. We've been getting some awesome feedback, even on last week's film. By the way, did you watch it? And did you listen to the episode? Dare Fan. If you skipped it because you've never heard of the movie, or you're like, I'm not into German New Wave films... shame on you, because it was an awesome episode. Alexander Schroeder was great, as always. And that film was really, really cool. And we got some awesome feedback on Twitter about it, because, I don't know, I guess people were discovering it. Maybe it was the images. Maybe they had heard of it. But it was great, including one of my favorite, I don't know, Twitter followers. I shouldn't say she's a follower of me. She might be, but I'm a follower of her, which is Kiwi Smith. I don't know if you're familiar with Ms. Smith, but she is so awesome. She wrote great movies like Legally Blonde, and how about one of the greatest high school films of all time, 10 Things I Hate About You? And, you know, her Twitter's an awesome place. But, guys, she commented, I guess to her friend, like, hey, have you seen this movie? And started a little bit of a dialogue with people. And, I don't know, I hope someone bought the movie. If we can get at least one person to buy The Fan, I'm happy. I've done my job here in High School Slumber Party. So thank you all for participating this week and starting the internet chatter about this film. Because it was a fun one, honestly. Of course, more homework, guys. As always, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to us right now. Whether it be Apple Podcasts, rest in peace iTunes, whether it be Stitcher, whether it be Spotify, whether it be Google Play, hit that subscribe button. Also, leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. All this helps with the algorithm to get more people to notice High School Slumber Party. You know, we're that podcast in the back of the class going, oh, hand raise, me. Pick me. And hey, if the teacher ain't picking us, pass a note to your friend. Pass a note that says, hey, I found this podcast. It's pretty dope. It's called High School Slumber Party. I think you'll enjoy it. The host isn't always sick, so ignore his voice on the latest episode. But, you know, telling a friend is the best way you could spread all the joy and love of High School Slumber Party. So speaking of joy and love, and if you've been doing your homework, and if you've been listening the last couple episodes, as we again are in our Women in Horror month, we're in October, the Halloween month. I don't know what my costume's going to be, by the way. I'm such a procrastinator when it comes to costumes. You better know your costume, because those like late delivery fees, unless you're priming that, those like delivery fees are terrible. And you know what's also terrible? If you go to like a costume store the night before Halloween, I digress. Regardless, if you have been listening, one of, again, the cornerstones of the Cage Club Podcast Network, one of, you know, my inspirations, one of my best friends, my co-host on P.S. I Love Hoffman, our Philip Seymour Hoffman show, Kyle Reinfried of Foodie Films, a great, great show here on the Cage Club Podcast Network. That's cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me. He has been helping me the last couple of weeks decide what cereal we'll be eating on Halloween morning after our cool Halloween slumber party. So we went through all the monster cereals. He tried some blueberry. He tried some Frankenberry. He tried some of that old standard Count Chocula. And then I kind of surprised him, because when I was in Target buying these cereals, I saw two more Halloween cereals, and I said, why not? So, have a listen, and again, warning, there will be a lot of audio chewing here. Welcome back to our High School Slumber Party cereal, well, Halloween cereal contest, I don't know.
Ooh, creepy cereal.
Yeah, creepy cereal with
not
Kyle.
Not that that's really... You know, from Foodie Films, I love alliteration. I even put it in my theme song. But creepy cereal isn't technically... It's just alliteration. Both start with C's, but they don't have the cuss.
It sounds.
Yeah, it's sounds. Sound.
So. Cereals like to do alliterations.
Yeah.
And rhymes and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, blueberry.
But no, you know, we're trying to figure out what cereal we'll be having at the High School Slumber Party Halloween or post-Halloween morning. You know,
yeah. The
November 1st morning, I suppose. I don't know. And we've reviewed the monster cereals, which were Count Chocula, Blueberry, Frankenberry. Mm-hmm. And last segment, Kyle, I told you that when I was in Target picking up these cereals, I saw two more cereals that were Halloween themed.
Yeah, I thought there were just three, so I regret eating as much cereal as I had at this point and consuming all the milk that I've had.
Don't worry, just two more. And I have the box right next to you. Can you tell the slumberers what cereal we'll be talking about now?
First of all, I can tell you this is a potent potable. This is very, very, peanut buttery. But this is Reese's Puffs Peanut Butter Bats, limited edition. So I like the design. It's got the peanut butter cup, and at the edge of, like, the, what would you call that, the... ridges of the cup then becomes as if it's a bowl, and it has the shapes of these rounded-esque bats.
Yeah, and it looks like there's, like, they're, like, bat shapes in here. You know how the last time you're like, you know, if you don't like chocolate, you're not going to like Count Chocula.
Yeah.
If you don't like peanut butter, you're not going to like this.
Hey, you know, I'm someone that's really, not like on the fence of like, I don't like it, but I'm just so hot and cold when it comes to peanut butter. Like, I do love Reese's peanut butter cups because obviously the chocolate factor. I just sometimes, I think it's the smell of peanut butter more than anything. Sometimes it's just so strong that you just, I have to be in a specific mood to want it.
This is very strong.
This is, well, because again, it's like just trying to capture that flavor. And since, you know, I forget what is it, like smell plays or whatever percentage into taste, they're clearly just like taking a peanut butter Lysol can and spraying this probably. So, these are, I think, the biggest kind of pieces of cereal so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're definitely, whole, you know, not soaking in all the milk as much, which, again, I like. I'm definitely not going to be able to eat this whole bowl.
That's fine. We'll put it in
not
our cereal.
I don't like it just because
our cereal spittoon.
Yeah. Which I do. I'm like.
Yeah, just chew it.
I'll take one more spoonful bite. Get like the ones over the milk. So that's good. I'm going to try to carefully siphon it and just get just some milk right now. Let me finish chewing. Sorry for all the chewing, guys. Didn't really transfer the flavor into the milk.
I'm surprised because it's so smelly that you would think it would. I don't know.
I guess because it didn't really soak it up.
That makes
maybe
sense.
Maybe if I left it in a little bit longer, but okay, I'm going to take one more spoonful. I would love to. I remember probably a story that hasn't been shared on High School Slumber Party, but I've shared it plenty of times on Foodie Films. That shouldn't dissuade you from checking out Foodie Films. But I worked on a season of Top Chef once, as you know, and the finale was in the Bahamas, and Chef Richard Blaze, who's still out there cooking away, follow him on Instagram. He won that. It was the All-Star season, so I forget what season he was previously on, but he won the All-Star season. And he won by, oh God, I'm totally going to blank right here. He crunched up a certain type of cereal, and it was a sweet cereal. And he used that as the crumbs on the chicken dish that he cooked.
Mm.
And not that I want to do that particularly for this, but I would like to figure out a dessert to make.
Mm,
so, I mean, that. For him, he did, oh, God. You know, it was like a sweet, but like a, so I'm blanking on, I'll have to look up cereals later. Maybe I'll look at that before this last bowl. But, yeah, he used it as, you know, as like you would use like breadcrumbs on, you know, a chicken parm or something like that. But I would like to crunch this up and maybe do like a cool Halloween dip or something like that.
Oh, I could see that. See, this is the Foodie Films mind.
Yes.
That's why we've brought you here. Again, you guys can check out Foodie Films. Foodie Films on cageclub.me or wherever you get your podcast. Same place you're listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Kyle, I don't know if you'll ever be able to get the taste of peanut butter out of your mouth again.
Probably not.
We should have done this one last, probably.
Yeah, this is a, need like a palate cleanser. Nice. Do you have sorbet of sorts?
I do not have a sorbet. Use that good old saliva. Nature's palate cleanser. So if you're new to High School Slumber Party and this happens to be your first episode, that's what my voice actually sounds like. But I feel, you know, the voice is an instrument. I feel like I'm warming it up a little bit. But don't worry, I won't take you away from this awesome Buffy episode for much longer. I swear I could still taste the peanut butter in the back of my throat. That one was not my favorite. Oh, thank God. The bell. Oh, never have I heard a sweeter sound. I need to get home, get some soup, And you know what you need to do? Besides, I don't know, maybe bringing me soup in a thermos on the next class. Be the teacher's pet. But also, since it's Friday night, pack your favorite jammies. Tell your mother you're sleeping over Brian's. Don't tell her I'm sick, because she probably won't let you. Because we're about to get our party on. I leave you with a song off the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack. Very interesting soundtrack. It is called Keep It Coming, Dance Till You Can't Dance No More by the C&C Music Factory, featuring Deborah Cooper and Q Unique. Of course, I picked the longest one today. Class dismissed.
Yeah, turn it up. Yeah.
Kara, welcome back. It's been too long. When was the last time you were on Hackers, I think?
Maybe. I mean, I was supposed to be on again recently, but I had to take a nap instead, and I do apologize for that.
All good, all good. You were missed, but I knew we were going to have you back soon, so welcome back. Do you need a refresher, though, on how we introduced ourselves on High School Slumber Party?
I don't think so. Let me try. I'm Kara Gail O'Regan, Lakeland Regional High School class of 2005? Yeah, that's right. Go Lancers.
Go Lancers. Great. Okay, cool. Got that out of the way because I'm ready to dig into this. I think this will be a fun one.
Yeah.
So just a reminder, guys, we are in our Women in Horror series. And finally, we have a women guest, I guess. I'm happy to have you. I would have had you on anyway because I know you're better at horror than I am. Because
I love horror. Women in horror, one of my favorite subjects. So I am thrilled.
Again, so happy to have you on. Want to get some housekeeping out of the way, though. Because off air you mentioned something to me about an earlier episode that we did a couple weeks ago. And I want to clear the air on it. Mm-hmm. So on the Scream episode recently, my guest, again, I had not seen any Scream sequels, and my guest, Autumn Ferrara, said that the Scream sequels sucked. And I didn't know because, I mean, I was just taking her word for it. But you said, on the contrary, that they weren't that bad.
I love them. I think, actually, Scream is, like, my favorite horror franchise. Like, yeah, they're not, you know, incredible films, but the foresight that was required to make the films as consistent as they were. Wes Craven directed all four of them. Well, okay. Also, there's a TV series. I cannot speak to the TV series. I have not yet watched it. But, you know, that's like across, historically speaking, with horror movies, you know, the same director doesn't tend to, you know, get to make all of the sequels, especially not from those movies in the 80s that so like heavily influenced Scream and its sequels, because they were just like really cranking them out. So the first Scream movie is about the conventions of slasher movies and these kids that are obsessed with it and take it way too far and start murdering people. The second movie is about the conventions of slasher sequels, like second movies. The third movie is about trilogies, and then the fourth movie is about reboots. It's really brilliant in the way that it handles that, but also Scream 3, like, it is wild to watch it now because it is, I'm trying to remember like what the setup of this even is. Within the movie, they're making a movie about these murders that happened in the first movie, and it's actually a sequel to the movie that they made about the murders from the first movie that you see in the second movie. This is so confusing.
Whoa.
I feel like I need an organizational chart. But the third movie has like a Harvey Weinstein sexual predator storyline.
Really?
Like, it's like fundamental to the plot. And of course, like so many of those great horror movies that came out in the 90s, the Scream movies were produced by Dimension Films, which was a like the horror subsidiary of Miramax. So like it seems very clear to me that like somebody was like trying to say something in Scream 3. And of course, to watch it now, like knowing what we know, it's pretty wild.
That's crazy. And
Yeah.
like again, I know nothing about the Scream series except again for the first one. I've heard that Scream 3 is low-key a lot of people's favorite in the series, so
Oh, interesting.
that doesn't
Okay.
surprise me then. I mean, obviously the Weinstein stuff isn't super cool, but it is cool in a sense that, like, I mean, the layers. And,
Yeah.
one of the interesting layers that I picked up when I was watching the first Scream is the whole, again, I don't remember the killer's name, but the fact that, like Liev Schreiber is, like, subtly in the first one, and doesn't he
Oh,
go
yeah.
on to, like, be a
He's
bigger
in the
deal?
second one and the third. Yeah, he's definitely in the third one.
So yeah, I
Yeah,
definitely
he's a much
appreciate
bigger
that.
character later on. Yeah.
And I guess to quote Scream, you kind of said maybe what your favorite series was, but what's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, good question. So I'm like a little disappointed that you're not going to have me on your Jennifer's Body episode because
Don't
I
make me
think
sad.
it's that one.
Really?
Yeah, I love it. I love it more every time I see it. It's so layered, you know, and so many horror movies. I mean, horror is a complicated genre for women because, on the one hand, a lot of women get more work in horror than in some of the other film genres. On the other hand, we're constantly getting murdered in these movies and raped, and like all sorts of horrible things happen to mostly women in horror movies, right? And this is actually kind of true of film broadly. You know, we've talked about before, like once you start tuning in to how much sexual assault is in movies, it's like you start realizing it's in almost every movie. And so often, like the portrayals of it are, you know, written, produced, directed by men. It's usually not the people that this sort of thing might happen to, you know. So Jennifer's Body is really interesting because it is written and directed by women, written by Diablo Cody, directed by Karin Kusama, and then it was marketed so poorly and so incorrectly that it totally flopped and had this reputation as this terrible movie. And thankfully now, 10 years later, people are starting to revisit it and be like, hey, wait a minute, this is fucking brilliant. Like, it's so layered and complicated and about like complicated relationships that girls have with each other, and it's scary and it's hot and it's like gross and beautiful and weird. I just love it. It's so good.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there because that is our movie next week, and we'll do something a little differently at the end of the episode. I'm going to let you handicap it again because I'm just getting very, very excited to rewatch it when you say that, and it'll be a good way to end our episode. But we can't distract from why we're here, though.
I know. Well,
We're still here to talk about something interesting, and that's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
yeah, and this is probably one of the first vampire things that I saw, and then would go on to be very into vampire things. Not by the time that Twilight rolled around, that wasn't really my scene, but I'm a huge fan of this movie. I was a huge fan of the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We can totally talk about the similarities and differences between those two things. I love vampire movies. So I'm super excited that we get to talk about this because the last time that I rewatched this was when Luke Perry died, and I was sad, and I had like an upsetting experience watching it because like Joss Whedon's dialogue, he just kind of like ruins everything every 3 minutes. But everything else about this movie is so wonderful. So watching it again this time, I was in a better mood and I enjoyed it a lot more. So I was happy that that happened.
Glad to hear it. And like in my notes, I have all these questions, and within like three sentences, you answered all of them. So that's awesome because I was going to ask you, how much you like vampires, if you watch the series, all these kind of things.
Maybe this will be your shortest podcast episode ever, because I'm answering all of your questions before you even ask them.
Well, I'm going to need to lean on you, because this is actually the first time I've seen this film.
Oh, what'd you think?
You know, it was better than I thought, and like, I can't wait to discuss it. So I watched the series, not religiously, though. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't like a super fan. Like, there were so many growing up.
But, yeah. Oh, and I mean, I love the series. I've seen it all probably only about 3 times. And I say only about 3 times because there are people out there who, like, you know, watch it every night when they go to sleep or whatever, and who really, truly are super fans. And I mean, that's one of the incredible things about, like, this single piece of intellectual property, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, like, it has such a huge fan community and such an intense fan community, but they're, like, not intense bad. Like, most of the Buffy fans that I know are, like, incredible people, and it, like, continues to live on after all of this time, like, even into podcasting. There's this wonderful podcast called Buffering the Vampire Slayer, where they're rewatching every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Great title.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, and it's hosted by these two queer women who used to be married to each other. So they're watching the series, like, with a queer lens on it, which of course is very much baked into the structure of the show. So it's great. They also record an original song for every single episode, and they're always amazing.
That's really cool. Wow, I definitely have to check that out.
Like, yeah, Buffering the Vampire Slayer. It's great.
So my knowledge of Buffy is just from popping in from time to time. Like, I know, like, who Angel and Spike and Willow, like, I know who these characters are, but I couldn't, like, retrace their arcs episode by episode. But again, I'm not a complete novice. So maybe you know this more than I know this, but how do, like, those hardcore Buffy TV fans view this film? Like, is it something where they're like, what the fuck is this? Or is it something that they, like, love?
Well, I think it's probably different for everyone. According to Joss Whedon, the movie is not really canon. Like, you're not really supposed to see that as a prequel to the TV show. He then later wrote a comic book, I want to say. And I also, there's, like, so much other, like, comics and other media out there that I have not gotten to. But he wrote, like, an origin story for Buffy, and that is supposed to be taken as the prequel for Buffy and not the movie. So, you know, I guess a lot of people don't consider the movie to be a part of the Buffyverse. I don't care. I love this character. I think she's great either way. But it's important to note that the movie Joss Whedon felt was taken away from him. Not that he was the director. He was only the writer. But he was not happy with how changes were made to his script and felt like it wasn't his pure vision. And so one of the things that was changed about his script is that at the end of the movie, Buffy was actually supposed to burn down the gym. And for whatever reason, that doesn't happen in this one. I guess it was, like, too intense and serious. But in the TV series, in the first season especially, there are a few references to, like, the reason that Buffy moved to Sunnydale and, like, got kicked out of her old school was because she burned down the gym.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Luckily for Mr. Whedon, he will get to, you know, fulfill his vision, and it won't...
Joss Whedon's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
He'll be okay. So if you guys stumbled on here because you were fans of the TV show, I apologize. We are talking about the film today, and every week I read the back of the VHS, so here goes. This is an interesting one. Blonde, bouncy Buffy is your typical high school cheerleader. Her goal is to marry Christian Slater and die, and nothing gets in her way when it comes time to shop. But all that changes when a strange man informs her that she's been chosen by fate to kill vampires. With the help of a romantic rebel, Buffy is soon spending school nights protecting L.A. from Lothos, the Vampire King, his sidekick Lefty, and their determined gang of bloodsuckers. It's everything you'd expect from a teen queen in the valley. So initial thoughts on that summary.
I feel like there was more to her list about what she wants to do before she dies, which was like, she just wants to like move to Switzerland, marry Christian Slater and die. You know, I just feel like it's important to like, you know, she's not so one-dimensional. It's all about Christian Slater. Yeah, I don't know. Like I was saying with Jennifer's Body before, that like they really like botched the marketing on that. I mean, the person who writes these probably hasn't seen the movie in most cases, right? Like
you've definitely
figured that out. So it like, you know, it kind of touches on some of the tone of the movie, but doesn't really do it justice.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I was too young to really appreciate this, but was like the Sarah Michelle Gellar Buffy such a valley girl?
At the beginning of the first season, she was more of that, but generally speaking, less than the character in this movie.
Yeah, because I didn't remember her as being like that. So when I was seeing this, I'm like, oh, wait, this is like the really hitting that hard in this film. Especially like all the girls talking to each other at the beginning.
And the mall thing. Yeah. I was thinking a lot about Clueless when I was watching this.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing.
Which, by the way, Amy Heckerling also made a vampire movie that came out in, well, it didn't really come out. I think it only was released on DVD, unfortunately. Interestingly, the Weinstein Company was the distributor on that movie. But anyway, it's this adorable little vampire movie that she made with Alicia Silverstone and Kristen Ritter. They're vampires living in the city, you know, just going about their lives. And it's a beautiful movie about friendship. And I loved it.
And what's it called?
Vamps.
Vamps. Yes, I remember from your Cinemakers run. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because you get the Silverstone and you get the... That's a nice merger right there. I like that.
Yeah.
I have to check it out. But, you know, speaking of kind of actors here in this cast really surprised me. Like, I was like, whoa. So, Christy Swanson plays Buffy. I wasn't too familiar with her, but, you know, apparently she had, like, bit parts in Ferris Bueller. And once I looked up her IMDb, like, I had seen her in things, but, like, I wouldn't be able to pick her out of a lineup or anything, you know. The Buffy I know, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, I spent my entire childhood wondering why she wasn't in more things. Be like, I love her so much. Why isn't she in other things? Why can't I see her in other things?
No, and I think she does a really great job here. So, I mean, I agree with you. And I read that Alyssa Milano was offered the part. Mm-hmm. That didn't work out. Who knows why? But then we get Luke Perry as Oliver Pike. And I'm sure you read, obviously, 90210 fame and a bunch of other stuff. And I'm sure you read that they had to shoot this film in 5 weeks just to get with his 90210 schedule.
Oh, I did not know that. Interesting.
Yeah, I found that super interesting. Now, maybe I'm mispronouncing this guy's name, but I've definitely seen him before. Rutger Hauer?
Yeah, that's approximately how you're supposed to say it.
As Lothos. And I don't remember where I've seen him, but I've definitely seen
him.
Oh,
he's in Blade Runner. He's in...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there was something else I just watched with him recently.
He's definitely a very familiar face.
Yeah, he's in Sin City. I think he's in Dune. He definitely is in like a lot of like sci-fi stuff because he has that weird kind of robot look.
It's true.
Like German robot.
Donald Sutherland, of course, plays Merrick. And I mean, as I was reading kind of the similar stuff as you were reading... Or you knew about Joss Whedon. Apparently, like, during in interviews, this is the one person he, like, really rips on the most in this film. Like, he hated working with him, apparently.
Well, listen. As much as I love the work of Joss Whedon, not a big fan of him, like, as a person. And I like, you know, here is this, like, legendary actor who has been on sets his entire life, and then there's this kid. I mean, Joss Whedon was, like, a child when this was happening, you know? And he, like, the reading, I forget what Joss Whedon said, but when I was reading it, I was like, I don't know, kind of sounds like maybe you were the asshole.
I mean, when you put it that way, it's kind of funny, because, like, I guess I just can't help to picture, like, powerful Joss Whedon. But, like, at this point, you're right. He's a kid, and he wrote a movie about high school vampires, and he's expecting this seasoned, you know, arguably legendary actor to just bend
who,
to...
Like, by all accounts, I believe is, like, a consummate professional.
To just bend to like his complete wishes. I mean,
which, like, again, like, he's the writer of the movie, and like, generally speaking, unless, you know, you have quite a bit of power as the writer of the movie, like, you don't get a say really in like what people are doing unless you make a big stink about it, you know. So I mean, you didn't even mention yet this was actually directed by a woman.
Yeah, I was gonna get to that.
Oh, because... you were leading to that, sorry.
No, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we should bring it up because, you know, this is women in horror. Mm-hmm. And we love to see this, obviously. I wasn't familiar with any of her other work, though. Her name was Fran Rubel Kuzi or Kuzai?
Yeah, I had not recognized her name either. I don't know what else she's done. I mean, like, she has producer credits on the TV show and also Angel and the upcoming Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot, question mark. But I think it's one of those things, like, she only has that credit because she directed the movie, you know, and it's just like mailbox money for her.
Gotcha. Yeah. So all the bios really talk more about her husband, and I didn't think that was fair, you know?
So fucked. Yeah. Well, I mean, welcome to, you know, being a woman who does a thing.
Yeah. So, and her husband is listed as a producer on this film as well, but, the only other film I saw of hers was a film called Tokyo Pop that was in a bunch of film festivals at the time. But she does a great job directing this film, I think.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. Yeah.
Back to Joss Whedon, though, for a second. Like, it's amazing that, like, she's the director and he has these expectations for a film at that age. And it made me think of something just tangentially related. I like to listen to a lot of, like, wrestling podcasts, like, behind the scenes in terms of, like, the writing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Luke Perry was a huge wrestling fan. And he's occasionally would, behind the scenes, like, write for the WWE and work with them.
That's amazing.
And his son is actually in AEW, which is another promotion that just debuted on TNT. And he plays a character named Jungle Boy, which is really funny. But you should check out to see what he looks like, because he just looks like a Luke Perry with, like, hair of someone you'd imagine called Jungle Boy.
But, yeah, they nailed it. That's exactly true.
But regardless, people, like, hate the grind of writing for wrestling, but love the results because it's 52 weeks of television. So if you write something, odds are you're getting it on the air. I bring it up because the expectation for a screenwriter or even, like, a series writer is, like, you're going to write 90, you know, of all your stuff, 90% of it is going to be, I don't know about 90%, but a high percentage of it is going to be thrown out. And it's just understood in film that it's open to interpretation by the producers and, you know, ultimately the director on set. So, I mean, I didn't come in with, like, a fuck you, Joss Whedon mindset, but you're kind of turning
You're really warm in my heart. I love to hear it. Fuck you, Joss Whedon.
Oh, man. Okay. Tangent over. Maybe not, but we'll see. But let's get back to this cast, because the next guy I was going to mention was Paul Rubens as Lefty, and I did not realize he was in this.
My favorite death scene possibly in all of film.
Wow.
Yeah. I love it so much. It makes me laugh so hard. I feel like it's like at least 20% of the foundation of my very sense of humor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't forget to bring it up later. I don't want to forget it.
Yeah. Well, so I don't even know, like, if I know how many times I saw this movie, like, as a child, because I just rented it from the video store constantly.
Speaking of the video store, that was, like, my first exposure to the film, even though I hadn't seen it. I was super confused. Like, I thought it was maybe, like, a knockoff after the TV show. You know when, like, other studios own the rights to things and they try to, like... That's what I thought it was. So maybe that, like, stopped me from watching it. But I definitely want to discuss the Lefty death scene later. But, I mean, I want to run through this cast because, again, Hilary Swank, like... Mm-hmm. I think that was her first role, which is crazy. And then I had no idea that David Arquette was in this film.
Yeah.
And quite a prominent role, too.
Yeah.
Some other people who are, like, cameo level or obviously would, you know, gain in fame. Tom Jane is one of the vampires. Ben Affleck, I don't know if you noticed him. He's, like, a random basketball player. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, when Joey and Mike were still going to do the Ben Affleck podcast, I was going to do the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode.
They can't. I mean, I guess you got to count it, but that's crazy because I think most people and whatever, like screw Ben Affleck, but I think most people think that like Ben Affleck's career just started at Good Will Hunting or and obviously he did stuff before that and a lot of high school stuff too. I read Ricky Lake is in this film, but I don't remember seeing her.
I don't know. She might have just been, you know, in the background or was in it and got, you know, cut out or whatever.
Which apparently was the fate of High School Slumber Party friend Seth Green, who was apparently cut from the film, except for apparently you could see him briefly. I don't know.
Yes, allegedly. This was like one of the first things on the IMDb trivia. Despite claiming he was cut from the movie, Seth Green does appear in it, although it is just for 3 seconds. And for two of them, he is seen from behind. He is a short, red-haired vampire that gets kicked by Buffy outside the gym when a group of vampires, including him, are taunting her. You can recognize him by his haircut alone. Seth Green, of course, would later go on to be on Buffy the Vampire, the series.
Yeah, he got the ultimate redemption there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved Oz. He was like one of my favorite characters.
I don't know if there's anyone else in the cast you wanted to mention. I was just scanning through, but I mean,
Stephen Root. He plays the principal,
and he's in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he like is on Barry right now, right?
Yeah. Oh, and he's awesome on Barry now. I think a lot of people remember him from Office Space.
Oh, right.
Definitely a very accomplished actor. That I don't know if he's a household name, but he's a household face. You know. Mm-hmm.
Because he's just this character actor that's just like been in everything forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, it was cool to see him as that principal. I don't know if we'll get, you know, I don't know if we'll dive into talk about him too much, but just, I mean, I like when he later he's just like throwing out the detentions and stuff, like mm-hmm. Cool character there. So yeah, I mean, let's dive in. We get this like quick scene, right? A back in time scene that, and when I say quick, it's really quick that it basically explains like, you know, when a vampire slayer dies, someone else becomes a vampire slayer, I guess.
Yes. So, and this is lore that does continue into the TV series, which is that throughout history, there are these women who are the chosen ones. There's only, I guess, one vampire slayer at any given time. And this is like fleshed out more later in the series that like there are a bunch of girls that have this potential, and then when the one vampire slayer dies, whoever was next in line kind of like comes into her power, and now she is the chosen one. And so she works with her watcher, who is played by Donald Sutherland in this movie. Giles is the watcher in the series, and it's generally a older man who acts as a trainer and a mentor and teaches her not only to protect herself, but also then to save humanity.
I mean, that's a pretty good descriptor. And yeah, Giles is way different from Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, but they still have like big watcher energy. Got like it's just this like kind of English, like somewhat uptight,
fair.
Has a lot of old books situation.
And correct me if I'm wrong, there's only one other like ancient flashback in this? Or is there more than, like, I can't remember them all.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're really that important. It's like, it's interesting to see. And I think it's also just like, there are so many things for men that like, you have a history for, you know, that there's this legacy of, I'm not thinking of a good example. Oh, the Dalai Lama, for example, right? Mm. There's this, you know, lineage and a long history stretching back generations. Women, we don't have that because nobody wrote it down. Or if they did, some man probably threw it out and lit it on fire. So I think it's kind of nice to see, you know, this like historical lineage of this very powerful character who actually happens to be a woman.
Yeah, no, and it's pretty cool. And I have to say, this movie, it didn't drag at all for me. Like it feels mm-hmm. pretty fast, which, you know, I think is great. And after we get
it's a tight hour and 26 minutes.
Which is nice. And I've noticed in this, like, horror series that I'm doing, at least the kind of horror that I've been watching, not very long. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I make a list of things that I love about horror movies, it's that generally speaking, at least until recently, horror movies are pretty short. And it's great. You know, why waste time? We're all gonna die.
Very, very true. And like, so when we get this early history thing, it's fast, and then it has that title card that says Southern California, the Light Ages, which I thought was fun.
And the light in this movie is wonderful. Like, even though so much of it takes place at night, there's a lot of like really wonderful neon signs and other like glowing and colored light that like gives it a really like beautiful and deliberate tone visually.
It's, you know, kind of making me think that like there are certain like decades that we picture different places in. Like, I can't think off the top of my head of one, but like someone says Paris and maybe someone thinks of like the 1920s, you know. I feel like if someone says California, it's like
Or
this
Southern
era.
California, yeah, it's definitely the like early to mid 90s, like surfers, skaters,
Bright colors,
yeah,
valley
balls.
accents, like.
Yeah. And I think like we owe so much of that to Clueless, but also to like all of the other movies that took place in Southern California from the 90s, Encino Man, which you have covered on your very podcast.
Absolutely. And it, again, such a moment. And I think at the end of this podcast, if I did a final tally, not a majority, but certainly a plurality of films will have probably take place in the valley, wherever this, whatever this mythical valley is, because I've never been there, but I feel like I know it.
It's weird how it's so close to where they make movies. No wonder there's so many of them about the valley. Although they don't actually make movies there anymore.
Very true, very true. I mean, we get a good sense of the high school dynamic. I mean, she's a cheerleader. We see that right away. They have some kind of pig mascot or the hogs or something. I don't know. But I think we're seeing at the beginning, while this movie doesn't take itself too seriously, it's still, it's, I don't know, there's like a fun vibe. I wouldn't call this a scary movie, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely not horror, just kind of like horror adjacent. Although it's my belief that all movies are horror movies if you look at them right. But yeah, no, it's like it's not taking itself too seriously, but at the same time, and this was like another kind of connection that I felt with like Amy Heckerling movies, that like it's taking seriously the inner lives of teenagers, which like a lot of movies don't necessarily. Although I don't know, like of the movies that you're watching for this show, do you feel like teenagers are like respected by the material?
Yes and no. Again, it depends on the film. You and I talked about The Breakfast Club way back when, and of all like the flaws that movie has, I mean, I think what a consensus we developed is that that is one thing John Hughes seemed to, I don't want to say start, but like kind of take seriously, which was just the plight of the teenager, if you will.
Although Amy Heckerling did do it before him, but you know, whatever.
No. I know,
Fast
but
Times at Ridgemont High.
which again, can't wait to cover on this podcast. But you know, that I think in the 80s that started to happen, and people started maybe rolling with that, but it waxes and wanes, you know.
Yeah.
You get movies that like adults enjoy about teenagers, but I don't know if teenagers today would necessarily relate. And the opposite, you know, I've watched films on here that I'm like, I'm way too old for this movie.
But I think that this movie, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, works in both, probably works in both demos, you know?
Yeah, no, I think I'd agree with that. So are there any scenes in the early part of the film that really stuck out to you?
I mean, I loved it when they were at the mall, because also the costumes in this are truly wonderful, and colorful and well detailed and like look good however they're framed, you know, whether it's like a wide shot or a close up. And there's that yellow leather jacket that they get. Ugh, love it.
Mr. Howard is so heinous. He's always giving me a hard time. I get a C plus on the test, and he tells me you have no sense of history.
I have no sense of history. He wears a brown tie.
You got a C plus. I can't believe I cheated off of you.
Excuse me for not knowing about El Salvador, like I'm ever going to Spain anyway. Oh, wow, look at that jacket.
Oh, this is so lush. Wouldn't you guys just love me in this?
Guys, what's the sitch? I'm bored.
What do you think?
Please, it's so 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Oh.
You and I in the past on Hackers and some other stuff have found some common fashion ground in these films. You know what I really liked that Buffy was wearing? It was like a... I wrote it down. It was like a yellow and pink outfit. I'm going to try to send you a picture in the...
Yeah. Oh, I see it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes. Oh, man. Okay, yeah. So it's... she's wearing a neon yellow sports bra and... neon pink leggings, and then over the leggings she has these like psychedelic pink, green, and black hot pants on. And then to top it all off, she has a navy blue bandana tied around her neck, but like in a very cute way.
I don't know, that outfit like stuck out to me. Like, I know I can't get away with that, but there's something eye-appealing about it. I just thought it was cool, because later she puts the varsity jacket over it, and it just screamed, like, what this movie was all about to me. Like,
yeah, yeah. Also, the cheerleading uniforms, the purple and yellow, you know, most people might know them as the Lakers colors, but did you know that purple and yellow are complementary colors?
I'm not as color-educated as you are, so I am learning today. This movie kicks in pretty fast. Donald Sutherland plays, you know, I mean, he's that, he kind of creepy old mans her and follows her, but he has good intentions to educate her on her vampire slaying ways. And there's not much of a, there's a little bit of, yeah, like her denial of her journey, but she kind of kicks it into gear.
Are you looking for somebody?
I was looking for you, actually.
Why, am I in trouble or something? Because if I am, I didn't do it.
No, you're not in trouble. I am. I'm years late. You should have been taught, prepared. But I wasn't certain until just now that it was you.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying that I've been searching everywhere for you, Buffy.
Why?
To bring you your birthright.
My birthright? Is that like a trust fund or something?
I think it'll be easier for you to understand this birthright if I show it to you. All right? So you come with me now to the graveyard.
No. My trust fund's in the graveyard? God, what's your damage?
Buffy?
You're one of those skanky old men that, like, attacks little girls and stuff, right? Well, forget you.
My name is Myrick, and you have been chosen, Buffy.
Chosen to go to the graveyard? Why don't you just take the first runner-up, okay?
Everything depends on you, Buffy. Now, you must come with me now to the graveyard while there's still time.
Time to do what?
Time to stop the killing. To stop the vampires.
All right, let me get this straight, okay? You want me to go to the graveyard with you... because I'm the chosen one and there are vampires?
Yes.
Does Elvis talk to you?
We get a montage, right?
Oh my God, the training montage. It's so good. I feel like it's maybe at least part of it was shot in the same like space that the auditions are held in Flashdance. Because they have those like big arched windows, but there's like sheer curtains over them. So you're like mostly seeing these bodies move kind of in silhouette. And like in Flashdance, you know, she's like doing her dance school audition. But in this, she's training to kick ass. It's such a good training montage. I love it.
And that she does. So, you know, this is kind of set to the background of their senior year, and they're gearing up for a dance, which is not the last dance of their senior year. It's like the fourth or fifth last dance of their senior year. But, you know, they're high schoolers. They take it super seriously. But earlier we meet, of course, the character of Pike, which is Luke Perry's character, and his friend Benny. I mean, I was very curious for your opinion. What did you think of, like, I guess, Pike and his, like, arc in this film and just, I guess, the role he plays?
I don't know. He's, like, kind of annoying. But at the same time, like, he like, it's kind of a damsel in distress role reversal, you know, where, like, instead the damsel is not the one in distress and he is. And, like, he has to have his ass saved by Buffy. But I don't know. He just kind of seems like an asshole.
It's weird.
But he's a teenage boy, so, you know.
Always the justification on this show.
Right.
Honestly.
It's like, it's not his fault. His brain literally is not fully developed yet.
And, you know, it was interesting because I saw a lot of the moments of, like you're saying, like the role reversal. Even, like, you know, flash forward to the end where he's like, did I do all this? In terms of, like, the ass kicking. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, I forgot the exact line she says. I think they knew they had Luke Perry and they couldn't, or they felt like they couldn't make him too much of a buffoon. I would have liked to see him more, you know, buffoony at times, because I feel like they also progressively tried to make him hotter as the film went along, if that makes sense. Because at the beginning, he kind of, like, he's pretty similar to David Arquette in terms of, like, look and the way he's acting and just, you know, being, like, the slacker kid and his, like, soul patch and stuff.
Oh, God, the soul patch. I feel like, you know, but now he's, like, interested in this girl, so maybe he's, like, trying to look hotter.
That's a good point, you know? Well, we can count it as character development at the very least.
Just, like, very subtle, but very deliberate.
And, of course, Benny gets bitten. Is that when? Is there, like, a proper term for being taken to the vampire side?
Yeah.
I'm sure some...
Turned, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like different, like, vampire universes might use different terms, but I want to say turned is maybe the Buffyverse word, but I'm not sure.
As a vampire fan, are you okay with, like, the different, I don't know, schools of vampire theory?
Yeah. Listen, guess what? Vampires aren't real. Who fucking cares? You know? Like, I mean, it's one thing if within a universe, like, the rules are changing all the time and aren't consistent, but, like, you know, it's, like, it's fun. It's, like, just different thought experiments, you know, and, like, different stuff borrows from other vampire fiction. And then in that movie Vamps, you, like, Amy Heckerling invented, like, a few, like, terms that I really enjoyed, like, day players. They refer to humans, like, regular humans as day players.
I like that.
Which I think is great. So, yeah, no, who fucking cares?
I don't know.
If you care that, like, two completely different pieces of vampire fiction aren't consistent in the roles of their universes, please, I implore you to get a life.
I just figured I'd ask, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I feel like it might be something to some people.
It might be. And you know what? Who am I to judge? I take it back.
Oh, man. Again, any other scenes that really struck you or stuck out to you or anything else in the film?
I work with flowers a lot, so I tend to notice flowers when they're in movies. And there's just a lot of very bad fake flowers.
It's funny you say
that. Just like in the set dressing, yeah.
I actually have it on in the background, and as soon as you said that, like, it's when they're all, like, sitting on the gym floor with like, making those flowers, but...
Well, no, the like, crepe paper flowers are different, because those are supposed to look shitty, but it's, like, just in the background as part of the set dressing, there's just, like, a lot of, like, arrangements of bad fake flowers.
So are they to the quality of the ones they're making? I guess that's what I was going to ask, because I was curious if, like, they just, like, used the extra flowers from this scene to, like, dress the set in other scenes.
Oh no, they are the other fake flowers are like if you ever go to a craft store and they have that whole section of like plastic flowers, it's like those.
I always like remember there's like they always have like a rose that has like fake like dew on it that looks so
Oh my
bad.
goodness. I work mostly with fresh cut flowers. But like there's some really incredible fake flower like flowers that like almost look real, and then there are ones that are just so horrendous. But I just, you know, when they're used right, like in the right circumstances, they're great. And they don't die on you, which is nice.
Oh, I know we're bouncing around here, but like I thought it was kind of odd that Donald Sutherland comes into the girls' locker room. Like
Oh yeah, very odd. And Buffy also acknowledges that. What does she say? She's like, "This is a naked place."
yeah, that's what she said. But you know, for like a teen movie, and especially a teen horror film, there's like no like
Oh, there's no tits in this, yeah.
Which, you know, from what again, I'm a novice at this, but a lot of them I've seen, they will just if it's a locker room, we're seeing boobs, you know.
Yeah.
Like so.
There's a gorgeous locker room boob scene in The Faculty.
Oh, I can't wait to do that one. I haven't
Yeah.
seen that in a while.
Oh, it's very good.
Yeah, but here, this is like a pretty innocent film. Is it PG-13? I mean, I think
Maybe,
things were different back
probably.
then anyway.
Yeah, well, PG-13 is a farce either way. Our entire rating system is a farce. Yes, it is PG-13.
It seems like a movie that kids could watch, you know, like even younger than high school age.
This kid did a lot.
Fair. Oh man. So I don't know if you want to just skip ahead to the when things get kicked into high gear, because I do have some questions, right? Like, so they have an opportunity to kill Buffy.
Oh, before we get into that, actually, one other thing about Buffy's powers that they do in this movie, and I don't think that they brought into the series, which is that Buffy can sense when vampires are near because she gets cramps. And I love that. That's so cool. Like, to, you know, obviously menstruation, it's a big part of people's lives. They do it for, you know, decades and we never talk about it and it's crazy. So I love to see any mention of it in film. And then to like turn it into a superpower, I love that about this.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty ahead of its time, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting, and it's not. I feel again, I'm the last person to be able to speak about this, but I feel like when they do talk about it in film, it's usually just like a quick one-liner joke,
Right.
you know? So I picked up on that
Or
too.
it's like, oh, she's acting crazy 'cause she has PMS. And it's just like, ugh.
Yeah,
God.
yeah.
Yeah, I wish it was a superpower and that I could murder you with
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because that was super interesting too. So, I mean, I guess getting just into the lore or like what's going on here, and I was a little confused. It didn't bother me that I was confused. I've learned that's one thing I've learned like while watching these horror films. Don't overthink it sometimes, you know?
Oh yeah, never overthink it. Not sometimes. It's like, you know, your horror, it's complicated because people have they say things are good movies or bad movies, and I don't feel that way, generally speaking, unless it's like clearly a bad movie. And like so many horror movies are like clearly a bad movie, but also they're amazing, you know? So it's like you can't take it too seriously. You just have to have an open heart about it. You know, it's never gonna be perfect, and it's never going to make sense, and it's never going to be believable, you know. But it's like it's fun, and it's like more horror is about feeling something viscerally and not necessarily about like using your brain, you know.
And I'm
Except for the
learning
horror
that.
movies that are, which are also great.
Now, so there's a moment where they can, I said they, the bad team of vampires can clearly kill Buffy. They end up, I guess, killing Donald Sutherland, right? And then they said, no, she's not ready. Do you know why that is?
I guess he just like he wants to have some, I don't know, fair fight isn't the word, but like He wants to take her when he feels that she is ready. I don't know. The first season of the TV series, there's a similar-ish character. I mean, there's always, like, every season, there's always, like, the big bad that she mm-hmm. is fighting against. And so, like, this comes up a few times. And she actually meets Dracula at one point, which is fun. But the... I think it's the first season. There's this guy called the Master, and he is all like, he's like the oldest vampire and like the biggest bad, and he's all like shriveled and old looking. He had this like master plan that like he could have killed her at any time, but he didn't want to kill her until like it was like the right time. It was actually her prom night. And actually she did die, spoiler alert, but she does come back. She was only dead for like a minute, but because she was dead for like a minute, it activated another slayer. And that's where Faith came from. And that was played by Eliza Dushku, who I love so much.
That makes so much sense. Like now, you know, I'm putting things together now through this. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you should rewatch Buffy. It's great. It's also like I said, I've watched it like three times. I watched it when it was on, I watched it when I was in college, and then I watched it a couple years ago, like when I turned 30 or something. And it's so interesting to revisit like at different stages of your life, because you're identifying with different characters, you're finding yourself attracted to different characters, you know, and it's just really interesting to revisit.
Yeah, I you know, I wish I had the time, because
oh, I like... know. There's too much TV and other things.
And there's so much, like, you know, it's easy to do a high school movie, but, like, to do high school TV shows, like...
Yeah.
That's a journey. I mean, I'd love to do it. Like, if I could just pause life.
I mean, also, you can watch things without recording a podcast.
No.
I don't
know
if you know this.
I do know that, and I tell people that all the time, because it's something that the network people often do. Like, oh, I'd love to do a podcast on this, and I'm always like... just watch it, man. Like, because that'll just drive you crazy. Yeah. No, but you know, in this, they end up having like, I don't, again, it's not a prom, it's some kind of dance. But I was gonna ask, like, what did you think of her dress?
Oh, I love the dress. I loved it. Let me pull up a picture so I can describe it to people. So it's white, and Buffy's prom dress the night that she dies is also white and kind of wedding dressy, which I think both of them are, like, on purpose. Let's see. Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie dance dress. Yeah. So, oh my God. So the best part about this dress is that it's actually convertible. So it starts out and it's like a longer, probably calf length tulle skirt, with like another layer of maybe white satin kind of bunched on top of it, and then has like a fitted bodice with not a sweetheart neckline, but kind of, and a halter top. But the tulle part, the longer part of the skirt, she actually rips off so that she can kick ass in a shorter skirt. It's so fun. And then she's also wearing white Converse that are like tied with like lace or something. They're great.
Yeah, and when she gets into kick ass mode, it's really, really awesome. Like, even for what, you know, at the time was just like a cheesy one-off movie of the early 90s. Mm-hmm. I thought it looked like super cool.
Yeah,
like some of the vampires, I don't know, are they're like slowly descending to look more like Dracula, which is, I thought was funny, because what's his name's, like, David Arquette's hair keeps changing.
So, oh, interesting.
Yeah, like, it's more, like, combed back.
I mean, even on the TV show, over time, the look of the vampires changed. Like, as they got a bigger budget and were able to, like, streamline the makeup a little bit more. So it might have just been something as simple as, like, how do we have this face on these people, you know?
Fair. And, you know, and her ass kicking, she's wearing like that, I think it's Luke Perry, not literally Luke Perry, you know, but what the hell's his name? I keep saying it.
Luke Perry.
Yes. No. Well, she's wearing the Luke Perry leather jacket. She's like literally kicking people, stabbing vampires. It's awesome. Oof. And then, you know, you wanted to talk about it. So if you want to just set the stage for the lefty Paul Rubens' death, by all means.
So Paul Rubens kind of plays Lothos's His bag man, maybe. I don't know. Like, his assistant or his, like, vice vampire guy, and played by Paul Rubens, or maybe a consigliere or a capo. I'm not sure. All of these words may or may not apply. So he says something earlier in the movie, and I forget who he says this about, but he just says, kill him a lot. Like, that's a direction that he gives his minions, is to kill him a lot. But anyway, so I don't even know what happens when she stakes him. Like, how's the run up to that happen?
Well, you know, it's just a big fight, right? And he kind of goes after her. I don't even remember.
Yeah. Well, so she stabs him with a stake, and instead of dropping dead, and apparently this was, like, all improvised. He just went on and on and on, being like, yee, ooh, ah, ah. And then, like, pauses and looks at her to make sure she's still, like, watching him. And then it's like, ooh, ah.
I'll get you, Buffy, and your little dog, too. I guess so nobody sees in you. You don't really think you can stand up to him, do you? Admit it, Buffy. Aren't there times when you just feel less than fresh? You're pathetic. Not even fit to die for him. We're immortal, Buffy. You can do anything.
Oh, yeah? Clap.
You're gonna wish you died.
And it just goes on and on, and then the rest of the movie happens, and the credits roll, and, like, we see some, I forget if they're still images, or no, it's, like, news footage, right? And they're talking about this thing that happened at the high school, and no one's quite sure what happened, and they're interviewing some of the kids. And then after that ends, Paul Rubens comes back, and he's still dying. And it's just so funny. It makes me laugh so hard every single time.
And the fact that that's, like, improvised, it's just, like, it was just, like, his Pee Wee Herman senses coming out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he has to make those kind of noises. And, yeah, no, I thought that was a great touch. I wouldn't have caught it if I, like, hadn't read about it in the mm-hmm. notes. And then I was like, oh, shit. And, again, I have it on the background now, and it's not quite that scene, but just how he keeps popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I don't think a lot of people talk about him in this role. It's such a wacky role, but it's great.
It's so good. Yeah. I mean, well, like, most people just know him as Pee-wee Herman. You know, they don't know necessarily who Paul Rubens is. And if they do, they probably think of him more as a pervert than an actor because of some legal issues that he's had with the police.
Yes.
That may or may not be warranted. But, yeah, it's a shame that people don't talk about this movie very much, obviously, because the show is much bigger. But, yeah, it's unfortunate that I think everyone in this movie is so good, and it's, you know, kind of forgotten.
I always, like, love to look up the casting director when I see films like this where I think everyone's acted well and there's so many people who would later go on to do something, because I feel like it's somebody with a good eye. So
yeah, for sure.
I'm going to look it up now. I want to try to give a shout out to this person.
Well, while you do that, the costumes were designed by Marie France. And I mentioned how much I loved them. She also did costumes for Coneheads.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I never know where to find these things. They don't make it as easy to find as the cast, because that's mm-hmm. all I ever know.
Oh, casting by Johanna Rae.
There you go. Johanna Rae, we salute you.
Oh, wow. She's worked with David Lynch a bunch. She casted Mulholland Drive, Twin Peaks The Return.
Oh, wow.
The original Beverly Hills 90210. So
makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it now.
And the original Twin Peaks too. Wow, cool.
See, you got to give shout outs to people like that.
Hell yeah. Yeah, because I mean, it's like so many times when people talk about a movie, they'll talk about the director, the writer, you know, but there's so many people involved in making a movie, and all of them work very hard and make so many decisions. This is why I think like auteur theory of like filmmakers who have this like singular vision, I think it's bullshit, because it requires so much teamwork, and it's actually like the vision of so many people that go into something, you know?
Yeah, no, it's interesting to talk about. And I mean, it's impossible to make a movie like as one person and really 100% be able to have your hand. Unless, again, I'm not talking about like an art, like a small art piece or something.
Right. Yeah. that's a different form of media, you know.
Okay, so maybe you can explain this. Maybe not. It doesn't really matter, but I am curious. What was the deal with the whole music element at the end? Like
the violin?
Donald Sutherland says something about silence, and then like later she's like, oh, that's what he meant.
Oh,
and then like the music stopped. Yeah, I couldn't figure that out either. I don't think, again, you're someone who's seen this movie a lot, I don't think people care about these little details.
Yeah,
I would just figured I'd ask, because I don't know, again, it didn't affect the movie at all to me. I was just curious like exactly where they were going with that. So anything else again in Buffy that you want to bring up or mention, or anything in your notes?
Oh, I enjoyed this little moment when, after I guess they killed all the vampires, or maybe there's a moment in between where Buffy and what's his name get to dance together, and he says something like, you're not like other girls, and then she says, yes, I am.
Yeah.
And I like that. Because you're not like other girls is so often used as like a put down for like other girls, like, oh, you're better than them, you know, you're not like them, so you're good. And I like that she was like, no, actually I am, and that's cool.
I thought they had pretty great chemistry, considering like mm-hmm. the subject matter here. Often in these films you see like what are supposed to be tender moments that are pretty laughable, but I thought some of them came out really like genuine in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, again, I thought it was a cool movie. I think, again, some people just use cool as just like a filler word. I literally mean like, you know, like there's a lot of cool moments.
Yeah.
One of them I wrote down, like when she has the California flag and she's like sword fighting with the bad guy. It's just like, it's so perfect for what this film is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
So if there's nothing else in the film, I mean, we got some weekly things we got to take care of.
All right.
Oh, first I wanted to mention very low scores on Rotten Tomatoes for this. 35% by the critics, which I kind of figured, but only 43% by the audience, which I...
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. But I think since the last time you've been on, we've changed the grading here. Now we actually grade like a school, because I'm an idiot.
Oh, okay.
Like AF thing, because I should have been doing that since day one. But
Maybe you're an alternative school.
Yes, maybe like a smiley face or like a... Like a pepper, or I don't know. But, no, but the pepper is bad, because that used to be like what, like rate my teacher or like rate my professor, and like people used to put that with the hot teacher. I think they banned that.
I forgot that was a thing.
Wow, that is weird. No, okay. So Kara, how will you grade Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Oh, it's so complicated. I think it's a solid B to B plus. Even though I love it, it like has plenty of problems that like make it not super great. It's still like stylistically wonderful. Like you said, it moves and you're never really bored. B plus. Yeah.
Good grade. So I'm giving this a B minus, and that was
tell that to my parents.
Oh man. down. So B minus from me. I expected to. I didn't expect to hate this movie, honestly, but I just expected it to kind of be blah.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more than that for me. And again, I think the pacing helps. I think it's acted really well for what it is. Is it silly at certain moments? Sure. But did I have questions? Yeah, but they weren't to the point that it was taking me away from the subject matter. And, you know, Luke Perry and Christy Swanson, as I said, I thought had really great chemistry. So B minus. Now, this is a question you might remember. What Buffy the Vampire Slayer sleeping bag are you bringing to the slumber party?
Ooh, yellow leather.
Ooh. See, I've noticed while playing this game, sometimes the simplest ones are the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really cool. I like it a lot. Now, this is a new category, I think, for you. It's called Rent Two Movies, Get One Free. And
ooh, fun.
I brought it on because, like, that's what I used to do, you know, take a weekend. There was a movie I picked, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch three this weekend.
I have been feeling such, like, intense pangs of nostalgia for video stores recently.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I'm just like, oh, the smell of one. Like, if I could just get a can of that smell and just, like, keep it at my desk for when I'm stressed out, be helpful.
Smell is, like, maybe the most underrated scent.
Oh, yeah.
Because people talk about it with food and, you know, things in nature, which is all fine and dandy. But when you brought up the smell of a video store...
You smelt it, didn't you?
Right away. And that's something that's not, like, organic necessarily, you know?
It's so powerful.
I don't know what I'm smelling, but I know exactly what you're talking about. So if we rented Buffy the Vampire Slayer, what two other movies would you want to rent for our wonderful slumber party weekend?
Okay, so definitely Vamps. I squeezed that in this afternoon because I felt like there was such a connection between Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Clueless that I was like, well, like, obviously I have to watch Amy Heckerling's vampire movie again now. And then I feel like there was something else that I watched the other day. Oh, you know what it would be? Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark. It's Ooh. So good. It is the first movie that she directed by herself. There was another one before this, I think, that she had co-directed with someone. It is kind of like a Texas Gothic vampire movie. It's like visually, literally very dark. But Catherine Bigelow was actually trained as a painter before she started making movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I see that so much in her filmmaking, and like every frame of that movie is a beautiful painting. Bill Paxton is in it. It's really interesting, really good, moody, weird, and kind of a lesser known entry in the vampire canon, but I think is heavily influential on like everyone that made vampire movies after that.
Wow.
You know, actually, can I actually read off a whole list of vampire movies that I would rent?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. So aside from Vamps and Near Dark, What We Do in the Shadows is so good. So funny. I watch it every year. Let the Right One In, which is a Swedish movie, I think. I think it's Swedish. It's from somewhere up there, and it's a hard to describe, but it's also a vampire movie that's very different than what you expect to see in a vampire movie, like both visually and just like tone wise. Vampire's Kiss, starring none other than Nicolas Cage. I just saw that for the first time a couple years ago with Joey and Mike. And it truly blew my mind, and I thought about it every single day for a long time. Another one is, of course, The Lost Boys, which is great. That's definitely a classic. Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's the full title of it, is Bram Stoker's Dracula, even though it's Francis Ford Coppola's movie. It's campy and weird and fun, and I love it. Once Bitten, starring a very young Jim Carrey, who's like a tall Tom Cruise in it. Nosferatu, which I think is considered the first vampire movie, or one of the very, very early ones from like 1922. It's a silent film. It's very interesting. It's, what was that movie that Willem Dafoe made?
I think it was called Shadow of the Vampire.
Shadow of the
like
Vampire
that.
Was yeah. about the making yeah. of that movie, I think, yeah. Fright Night is pretty good. Interview with a Vampire is real weird. And another thing that I watched a bunch of times when I was a little kid and then rewatched recently, didn't have a great experience with, is Dracula Dead and Loving It with Leslie Nielsen.
I was just talking about that with somebody. Yeah. I've not seen that since I was a child. So
it was so funny, and it doesn't really hold up. Oh. But those are, that's my like vampire movie list.
So as you said that, I was checking out my Amazon, and the Buffy credits are over. And under it, it says, customers who have watched this have also watched. And many of the things you said were on that list. And
there you go.
The number one was Vamps.
Ah, how delightful.
Number two, Practical Magic.
Okay, that doesn't have vampires.
I don't know. Not all these
but
have vampires.
That is one of my favorite movies.
Well, two other things we have to go over, Kara. But first, what would you like to plug? How's Wistful Thinking going?
Oh, Wistful Thinking's good. Over the summer, we did a bunch of camp movies. So for that, we did, what did we do? We did Meatballs. We did Little Darlings, which is a favorite of mine. We did Camp Nowhere and Heavyweights and, ooh, Sleepaway Camp. Have you seen Sleepaway Camp?
I have not.
Okay, well, that's... I just saw that for the first time, and that really just was an experience. I feel like I'm missing one.
I'm sure you got this, but every time someone says camp in movies, I think they mean, like, campy.
Well, that's why you need to see Sleepaway Camp, because it is both the absolute pinnacle of camp, and also it's a movie about a summer camp. we did Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. I can't remember what we did in September. Oh, we did Fern Gully, which was one of my favorite movies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we did Biodome, which was less good. and then for spooky season in October, we're doing Disturbing Behavior. That's going to be out sometime soon. It might be out already. I don't know. I don't know when this episode is coming out. I don't know when that episode's coming out. So, you know what? It's already out, maybe. It doesn't matter. We're also going to be doing I Know What You Did Last Summer. And ooh. Then we have not... October happens to have three Thursdays in it, the last Thursday being the actual day of Halloween.
Oh.
So, yeah, we're going to have to do something special for that. We haven't figured it out yet.
Absolutely. And when I was putting together my yearbook special way back... at the end of last year's school year, I had to listen to like all my episodes, and I listened to our Grease crossover. And if you want to say something that holds up, that episode holds up. Like,
oh yeah,
those
oh,
two.
Good.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to them. And Grease won quite a number of awards, if I remember correctly. Not that I agreed with all the choices, but yeah. I replayed our little MASH game, and that was super fun. And yeah, I mean. Wistful Thinking, always a good time.
Oh, well, speaking of Grease, I'm actually going to be on the newest lap of Too Fast, Too Forever.
That's right.
Too Fast, Too Furious podcast. I had never seen a Fast and the Furious movie until the other day when I saw the Fast and the Furious movie, and I was thinking so much about Grease with all the drag racing. Mm.
Yeah, your run on Too Fast, Too Forever has been something I've been anticipating since Joey told me about it, because I love getting people who haven't seen something and just their reactions.
So
I'm super excited to listen for that one whenever that one drops, because I think it's going to be super cool. And, I know a little inside baseball. I look at the schedule. I've seen some of the pit stop films you guys will be doing, and I'm super excited for that as well.
All right. That's exciting.
So one last thing. I promised to do this. You spoke about it a little, but next week, again, we're doing Jennifer's Body. Sorry that you weren't booked for it. I feel bad about that.
I mean, honestly, how dare you? But whatever.
So what do the slumberers have to look forward to if they've never seen Jennifer's body?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, obviously, Megan Fox is super hot. Other than that, I don't know. No, I'm kidding. Adam Brody, who some may know as Seth Cohen from The O.C., plays the lead singer of a band who totally would have been on The O.C. It's like this like indie band that comes to town, and that makes me laugh a little bit. It's so hard to say. So one of the wonderful things about horror is that like people who make horror movies are so often huge fans of horror movies. And so, you know, like so many movies will borrow from other movies and stuff like that. And so there's, you know, there are definitely pieces of Jennifer's body that are homages to other horror movies, but there's so much in it that is just truly visionary. And like, we had not seen dynamics like this in horror movies before, or like movies maybe even.
Wow.
You know, like just incredible female gaze stuff and interesting kind of plays on some of the tropes of horror.
I really, really can't wait to see it. That's, you know, something I'm definitely looking forward to. And I want to thank you for helping navigate through the vampires of Buffy today.
Oh, anytime.
Well, Kara, hope to speak to you again soon. And again, can't wait for more Wistful Thinking episodes and your much-anticipated lap on Too Fast, Too Forever.
Yes, looking forward to it.
That episode really made me want to watch the Sarah Michelle Gellar Buffy the Vampire Slayer 2. I don't know if I'll find the time, but maybe. Who knows? A lot of good shows on TV, though. But this isn't a TV show podcast. This is a movie podcast. This is a high school movie podcast. And I just want to thank Kara Gellar-Regan one more time. Check out Wistful Thinking. Check out that run on Too Fast, Too Forever. And that's going to be on cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, guys, we got homework for next week. And you guessed right. It involves another high school film. And another film, you know, in our women in horror theme, which I'm having so much fun doing. I can't wait till it's over, in a sense, because I'd like to see another film besides a horror film. However, I've seen so many interesting movies and had such great conversations that, you know, it's been a fun month. But our film next week will be Jennifer's Body. Can't wait.
You and me are going out tonight. Wear something cute, okay?
You always do what Jennifer tells you to do.
It's just that I like the same things that she likes.
Hey, Jennifer. You look really pretty.
Why don't you just come by my place? That was random.
This isn't really your house, is it?
We can play mommy and daddy.
No way.
We always share your bed when we have slumber parties.
Jennifer's evil.
I know.
No, I mean, she's actually evil. Not high school evil.
Chip is looking really cute to me lately. How is he tasting these days?
You are never a good friend.
You could have anybody that you want. My Chip.
You're killing people.
No, I'm killing boys.
I'm scared. You only murder boys.
I go both ways.
I will finish you if I have to.
Okay. You can barely finish gym class.
But of course, you guys knew that already because Kara gave a pretty good endorsement on Jennifer's Body. I haven't seen it, so I can't wait to watch it. And I can't wait to hear from our guest next week, because it is a first-time guest, but another integral part of the Cage Club podcast network. That's Islyn Addington, and I can't wait to speak to her on this film, and I can't wait to hear her thoughts. So guys, you know your homework. Watch Jennifer's Body, and come back here next week, same day, Friday. Remember, Fridays are for fun. Same place you're listening right now. And hopefully, I will be recovered from this illness that's going through my body, and hopefully I'm not turning into a zombie. Because after watching all these horror films, not gonna lie, thought has crossed my mind. Anyway, let's leave you with another song from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack. This one is called, let me see, I Ain't Gonna Eat Out My Heart Anymore by Divinyls. Later, dudes.
It's over. Go home. Go.